From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
We've all heard about what plants and other features figure into making a garden for the birds or a pollinator garden, but what about a frog garden? I'm crazy about frogs and would like to think my place is one such habitat, so I was delighted to get an email recently from today's guest, Jim Search, with the subject line, Gardening for Frogs. Yes, please, I thought, and that's our topic today, how to be more amphibian-friendly in the way we create and care for our home landscapes. More in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Today's guest, Jim Search, is a trained naturalist and vice president of the Connecticut Horticultural Society. He recently retired as education coordinator from the Yale Peabody Museum in New Haven. As a naturalist, Jim has a deep understanding of geology, plants, and wildlife and how they interact within a particular ecosystem, and writes about some of that on his blog, beyondyourbackdoor.com. He co-founded a native plant seed library at his local public library and also founded a local chapter of Frog Watch, a national community science project to identify and track frog populations. He's passionate about helping others decrease lawn and rewild their yards to welcome a diversity of creatures, including frogs, our topic today. Hi, Jim. I'm so glad to meet a frog gardener.
Oh, great to be here, Margaret.
Because I just love them. I don't know why. I just love them. So, and here all these years, I thought I was the only person who thought of it that way. So I was just, as I said in the introduction, delighted to get your email. So, you know, you've obviously, from your background that I just also explained in the introduction, you obviously know a lot about a lot of different organisms and you know, animals and different species and so forth, plants and animal. Why amphibians? Why are you thinking about amphibians right now?
Yeah, they as a an order of animals, they are getting hit pretty hard by various factors, including climate change. Habitat loss is a real big one, and insecticide and pesticides. So worldwide, there's, you know, that scientists have noticed like a 40% decline in the world's species. So yeah, anything we can do to help them in our yards, in our gardens, in our outdoor areas would be great.
Yes. And the impacts of climate change apparently on amphibians, I guess they're cold-blooded animals, yes. So they can't regulate their body temperatures. And so climate change is having I've read in some places almost like double the rate of impact on them that on some other forms of animals, on some other orders of animals, because they're just almost defenseless. I mean, besides, you know, it's destroying habitat that they need, but also the temperatures and so forth, the warming temperatures
right.
are not so friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, to think about the these species such as wood frogs and spring peepers that come to vernal pools, these temporary puddles, these temporary ponds that are in the woods, and then they dry up often by August or September. So there's a race to develop their young. And with increasingly wacky weather, you know, if we have a lot of drying, real drought times through, and we did
right.
here in Connecticut last summer, these, you know, they may have problems to develop in time if their vernal pools dry up. This could be a
right.
problem. Yeah.
And you know, you say vernal pools, and these are temporary water features. And it's important because if I'm one of those little frogs that you just mentioned and I want to lay my eggs for the next generation, I don't want to do it in a larger body of water, a permanent body of water that has fish who want to eat those eggs. I'm
Exactly.
oversimplifying. I'm not a scientist. I'm oversimplifying, but that for me was a big aha. Why use a shallow, temporary water feature? Well, guess what? It has no fish residents in it, you
Right.
know? So that's a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So it, before we get go any further, frog versus toad. You know, people
Yeah.
think, well, one's wartier.
Right,
One's
right.
on land more and one's in the water more, but it's not quite that simple.
Yeah, actually, toads are a kind of frog, and they're and yeah, you can look at some of the physical characteristics. They have drier skin, and they, those things people call warts are actually glands, and they have short hops, and their eggs are long strands in the water, whereas frogs have clumps or clusters of eggs. Those are some of the major differences. Yeah.
And w within the frog end of the frog world, the different species are more or less aquatic. Like I think bullfrogs are strictly aquatic. Yes, you're always going to find them in or right near water. Again, I'm not a scientist, but whereas some frogs have a arboreal, or is it arboreal, a tree, like they spend more
Great
time in
tree
the
frog.
trees, or they're terrestrial, or some, can be on land a lot more and so forth, and even sometimes take refuge in the off season, in litter or whatever, or burrow a little bit. I mean, different frog species have different, it's not all just toads are on land and frogs are in the water either. It's not a delineation like that, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. So that even green frogs and bullfrogs that are very much aquatic will come out onto land, particularly in, rainstorms and moist areas, and they'll hunt for food there too. But they primarily they're hanging out next to or in water, as you say.
It's interesting. And then on the other hand, even the toads require the water for reproduction, yes.
That's right. Every frog and toad needs to breed in water. That name amphibian, meaning amphibios, double life. It's Greek, I think, a Greek term. But there are some salamanders that actually are terrestrial. They're born, like with our red-backed salamander that we have in our state and throughout, lays its eggs in moist logs. So that's a little different.
I didn't realize that that was the one. And it's interesting because now you say that that's one that I do not find in my in-ground water features. I find the spotted, and I find well, again, I every time I think about this one, I think of the red eft stage of
Oh, Eastern Newt.
eastern newt.
Yes.
We know it most of all, those of us who live in its range, know it most of all from its on land part of its life cycle, when it's the red eft, the little a charming little red creature, orange
It
and red
is.
creature, but it has an aquatic stage at the beginning and end of its life.
Exactly. And when it's in that land stage, they're about 25 times more toxic than the other. And so that red coloration is a nice warning coloration to other animals that don't eat me.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's interesting, huh? I didn't know that. I mean, in plants, of course, and certain pigments are prevent predation, herbivory, et cetera. And so I didn't realize that that was the case in that salamander. Okay, don't eat me. Please do not eat me. I am not tasty. So how does a place in, we're talking about, the home garden landscape. Mine is a little more rural, and so one of the first things I did, and I did not do it to benefit amphibians, and I did not do it to benefit birds because I didn't know anything. This is back like 40 years ago. But I was a city girl. I bought a country place. And the idea of the sound of water was very appealing to me. So I dug with help a couple of in-ground water features, substantial sized water features that would have moving water in season and so forth. And early on, I saw creatures were in them, and I read in, there was not internet to search. I read in field guides, in real books, about that I couldn't let them freeze over, or the creatures who were slumbering in there would suffocate. And again, I'm oversimplifying, but so I kept defrosting, de-icers to keep a hole in the ice and things like that. So basically, from very early in my gardening adventures here, I, again, selfishly for my own enjoyment, I added 365-day access to water.
That's
And
great.
that changed everything. Again, I didn't do it for that reason, but it ended up turning me into a frog gardener.
There you go.
So
That's great.
is water really number one thing, or what are some of the attributes we need?
Well, so you can think of frogs as in any kind of wildlife needing the basic needs of a habitat, right? And it's food, water, shelter, and space. And so water is a real big one, definitely, because if you have a water feature, it doesn't have to be a huge pond or lake. It could be, something that you dig out yourself or put in a pond liner. That certainly is a great way to bring them in. The and to have them overwinter, they need to have a little bit of depth. That a couple of feet would be great for. And they kind of hang out at the bottom through the winter. These are the aquatic species that we talked about, green frogs, frogs. I'm sorry, green frogs and
Holes.
bullfrogs. Wood frogs will sometimes do that as well, but mostly in the leaf litter. So food would be, well, think about planting native plants, and because they will then in turn be fed on by insects and other critters, slugs and snails, and those are food for frogs. So frogs and toads really are great for pests, and they do eat slugs and snails, so that's great to have. But if you think about those food webs, if you're establishing a kind of a mini food web in your yard, that's exactly what they need. And shelter you can provide with having dense vegetation. Native vegetation would be, is probably best, and not, kind of overplant. Don't have a plant here with a big space and mulch, just to have, big, densely packed areas that would then provide that moisture gradient to have to be a moist, more moisture for frogs and toads to be in. The no mow May that was a couple years ago was a big deal,
Right, not to mow your property, not to mow your lawn in May. Right, no mow May.
right,
It came from
right.
England. It was a tradition started in England, yes.
Exactly. And they that's that turned out to be some of the it didn't really attract a whole lot of native plants, because sometimes you might get some invasives in, or just lawn, just turf.
Right.
But it's funny, when I did that, and I think I'm still going to do it, because the grass, the long grass, really attracted, for me, pickerel frogs. They came in, and when I did mow a section of it, very slowly, don't race through with a mower, that I did find like four or five just jumping around through there. So that pickerel frog's a species that will come in and hang out in a sort of a meadow environment. So,
Well, and I think my observation from having the water gardens, and there's a it's not like, someone would dig a swimming pool and have a big, patio around it, where they get up their chaise lounges to lie on, and while everyone was swimming. You don't want that type of environment, right? You want near the water's edge to also be places where one can go and hide a little bit or get a little shade, or as you say, the moist, you know, there can be some moisture soil and so forth. And so I just like when with if you're feeding birds, you it's good for them to be able to get pretty quickly, not right next to the bird feeder, but pretty nearby, some shelter, some shrub, a tree. Do you know what I mean? That
exactly.
So it's the same kind of thing, but on ground level, is to have it be a little bit of planting nearby, you know, a little looser nearby that water feature as well. And I noticed that's what seems to really work.
It definitely. Yeah. So those emergents, those edge plants are really great. Marsh marigold would be one early plant for the spring and brings in queen bumblebees when they first emerge. Cardinal flower likes damp conditions. It would do okay there. Pickerel weed is a great native plant. And it actually, there is a specialist bee that comes to pickerel weed. It's called the pickerel weed longhorn bee. And so that, you know, that's another great native plant, that sort of an edge species you could put in. And as well, floating plants. And, you know, it's funny that you go to nurseries and with selling water features and so forth, almost every plant is exotic. And I think there's a real opening for nursery folks to start a native plant, aquatic plant business, because it may be hard to find some of these natives. But
right, because you're right. Most of the pond plants that we've used, a lot of them are not native.
Right. Yeah, and there are some great native floating plants too. American white water lily, Nymphaea odorata is a great one. Yellow water lily, Nuphar variegata. Some beautiful flowers, you know, that could be put in too. And then you also might want to think about oxygenators, those plants that are submerged in the water. There is a native species to the eastern U.S. and northeast. It's called coontail. And that just provides oxygen into the water, particularly if you don't have a pump, you know, and then tapeweed is another one, Vallisneria americana. That would be another plant that could be provided. So there's a number of them that you can look up, and maybe your local extension where you live would, at a university extension, might give you some thoughts on that.
This time of year, you know, we're almost in March when we're speaking, and everybody's missing in action. I can't see any of my amphibian friends right now, right? It hasn't been consistently warm enough for anybody to sort of poke their faces up and or sun themselves on the stones alongside the edges of the water gardens or whatever, but soon. So they're kind of in this... is it brumation? It's not a full dormancy. They're down there, and I leave a little muck in the bottom of. I never change the water in my water gardens. I'm sort of cultivating the water to be, you know, what it is. Right. I do shade it with floating plants so that I don't get a lot of algae growth. But I don't empty it and clean it like it's a swimming pool, you know, that's not the point. And I do leave, I scoop out at the end of the winter, I scoop out around sometime in March, heavy accumulation of leaves and things that have fallen in. But I do leave a bunch of it down there in the bottom because it's a good place to tuck into, I think, in the winter.
It is. That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah. It'd be really good. It's a good place for that. Yeah.
So suddenly everybody's going to be coming up, and it's going to be crazy mating season, and there's going to be lots of talking.
and oh yes,
that's the thing that I just love about them is their vocalizations, first of all, and are hilarious and distinctive to each species, but also. I don't know, their mating behaviors and so forth. I mean, I love watching all the competition that goes on at pondside and, you know, who's in charge and who's the biggest, toughest guy kind of, you know, in the neighborhood. And I mean, it's a wonderful way to observe, you know, sort of life at work. I just that's what I love about them. So yeah.
It is, and it's usually about the first frogs to come out in the east, the northeast. Actually, one would be the wood frog, and you need a rain that actually starts in the afternoon and goes into the evening. It has to be about above 44 degrees Fahrenheit. I
Okay.
guess that's the number. I was out
Okay.
searching. It was close to that. I was out last night and looking for them, but it was just a little too cold, and the rain
Okay.
didn't didn't continue. But yes, they'll come into the pools to breed. It's the males that call. And if you ever are by a pond, or some people have them right around them where they live, but it's interesting to listen to them too. Like spring peepers, when you give that peep kind of sound, and
Yeah.
no, and it's the chorus is ear splitting when you're right next to it. But
Yeah.
sometimes you hear males, and they actually change pitch to tell the females, hey, I'm a little bit different, so come on over here. So
Right. I'm the best guy. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's wonderful. So we didn't talk about chemicals. And people are obsessed with like mosquitoes and they oh, you have water in your garden, Margaret? You must have terrible mosquitoes, all of this worry about mosquitoes. And I don't have any mosquito problem, and I hope it's partly because I don't use any chemicals in the garden. I don't kill bugs, I don't do that. And so I rely on my companions, the birds and the dragonflies and the frogs and so forth to help me with control of insects. And it seems to all work out okay. But that's another worry that people have. And also, I think when we're going to be encouraging amphibians and other animals, of course, as well, but these delicate animals, we have to be organic gardeners, I think, as well.
Yes, wherever possible, but what you have, you probably have a nice aquatic food web. You'll have dragonfly larvae, or dragonfly
Lots.
nymphs.
Yeah.
Yeah, dragonfly nymphs would be one that would kill would eat mosquito larvae. So yes, they're the more different species you have, the better, and that can really help with mosquito control. Some people use the mosquito dunks. It's actually a natural occurring, it's in soil, a bacterium that is actually what attacks mosquito larvae. And that can be used if you don't have a setup like you have. So it doesn't seem to harm frogs as far as I know, or I've heard. But again, use something like that with caution. But everything else, particularly in your plants, because if you're using insecticides and herbicides in your yard, in your lawns, or in your plants, they can get into your water features and in your pond.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
there's
Yeah.
really, yeah, and there are some that are really, really toxic to amphibians.
Yeah. So any other advice in the last few minutes? Any other advice in particular that, when people want to be more mindful of making amphibians at home in the garden? I mean, the water, I think you said, but it can even be small. I think I read something you sent me. I think you've even used a bubbler, kind of, a smaller setup, or our mutual friend Julie Zickafoose, her warbler fall, for instance, a seasonal water feature. A little bit of water is a good thing, even, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It's interesting that you should say that, because I had a little bubbler and I had it on the ground, and that can attract a lot of different birds besides the frogs. That sound of water is really attractive to lots of different wildlife. So yeah, I had a pickerel frog sitting in mine one day. I was like, whoa, what do you that's interesting that you're here. Probably needed to, get some moisture. And so even something like that is a great thing to do. Julie Zickafoose has that warbler fall, and you can find her plans online for that. So that can bring in some amazing different warblers, different birds that you would never see at a bird feeder.
Yes, exactly. And are there frogs, like with birds, people are like, oh, I saw such and such, I mean, we're both in the Northeast. Are there frogs or toads that you're like excited when you see it because it seem it's unusual or something? Are there sort of holy grail like there is with birding?
Yeah, there are a few different ones that they may be at the top of their home range, and so not as plentiful as others. And some may be declining because of the habitat loss. There's a few species in Connecticut that they actually like sandy environments. One is the Fowler's toad, and that's probably the first place that you would want to build a house. So, with development happening, those are kind of getting hit hard. So, yeah, hearing one of those would be great. And I just wanted to mention a great national program. You did mention in the beginning, Frog Watch USA, and it's just going out and listening for frogs and toads for 3 minutes after you sit still for 2 minutes once a week. And entering that data into a national database, and that's helpful for scientists to know when frogs start singing or calling in the beginning of the season. That could, that could change through climate change and so forth, and the presence and absence of species in various wetlands, and if particularly if it's done long term. So if you go to Frog Watch USA, you could find a chapter in your part of the country.
I'll give the links to that and everything else we've talked about in the transcript of this podcast over on awaytogarden.com. And yeah, you mentioned toad houses, toad abodes. Is that what you call them? Toad abodes. Yeah. So I got to learn more about that too. Maybe I'll find some links. I'll get some links from you about that too. But I appreciate your making the time today, Jim, to talk about my favorite creatures. I shouldn't say my favorite. I love all the creatures, but I don't know. There's something about frogs that just cracks me up every time. So I just love them. So thank you so much. And I'll talk to you again
Oh,
soon, I hope.
thanks so much. It'd be great.
Okay. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening, including with frogs, meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of AwayToGarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.